Welcome to
America's Cannabis Conversation,
where you can hear experts from all facets of the cannabis business as to what's happening in this exploding industry. Keep yourself informed. Join the conversation. Welcome to America's Cannabis Conversation, quick news update. I'm Dan Perkins. Washington, D.C. 30 members of Congress blast Biden's marijuana-related White House firings. A coalition of 30 members of Congress sent a letter to President Joe Biden on Thursday that criticizes the administration for terminating or otherwise punishing multiple White House staffers who admitted in the past using marijuana. The lawmakers are asking for clarification on the employment policy and urging the prior cannabis consumption no longer be used as a justification to disqualify people from serving in the federal government, especially since Vice President Kamala Harris and at least one other cabinet member is on record about their own marijuana use experience. Representative Earl Blumbauer, Democrat of Oregon, co-chair of the Congressional Cannabis Caucus, led the letter, which states that lawmakers were dismayed to learn that several White House staffers were reportedly suspended or put on probation or asked to resign after honestly disclosing past cannabis use. The American people are demanding a change to punitive and harsh cannabis laws that have always been unequally applied, the letter states, adding that the employment policies have been applied in inconsistent and unfair ways, given the past presidents, as well as Harris and Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg, have admitted to using marijuana in their youth without consequences. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki addressed the controversy on Wednesday, saying that during a press briefing that while Biden could theoretically end the policy of firing staffers over prior marijuana use himself, that's not happening as long as cannabis is federally illegal. Biden personally opposes adult use legalization, but he has backed more modest reforms such as legalizing it for medical use, expunging prior cannabis records, and rescheduling marijuana to allow states to set their own policies. Springfield, Illinois. Illinois lawmakers approved bill to legalize any amount of marijuana and expunge past records. Illinois lawmakers have narrowly allowed a bill to move to the House floor that would automatically legalize all cannabis possession laws regardless of the amount held. House Bill 3085 was approved on a vote of 10-8 Tuesday morning in the House Judiciary Criminal Committee. The bill's language removes all criminal penalties for possession of any amount, say that again, any amount of cannabis, and automatically expunges any criminal records for someone convicted of a similar offense. It has been a burden on brown and black families for over 50 years, this artificial war perpetrated on our community for the benefits of others, said State Representative Mary Flowers, Democrat of Chicago. Flowers pointed out that there are no limits on how much recreational cannabis dispensary can sell, making their owners, all white in Illinois, millions of profits. Consumers have limits on how much they can buy and possess at one time. Under the existing law, possession of less than 30 grams of cannabis flower is legal, but there are still penalties for people who are caught with more than the stipulated amount. Federal law still considers cannabis a Schedule I narcotic. The Illinois Sheriff Association warned that the bill would not only cause confusion over the automatic expungement of anyone currently incarcerated under the cannabis conviction, but also would let them legally carry a firearm. This is still a federal disqualification for the Firearms Owners Identified Program. The bill passed without Republican support. A couple of Democrats either voted against the measure or abstained from voting. Our last story comes from Washington, D.C., and probably the most important story we've done in a long time. Congressional researchers analyzed 280E marijuana tax penalty and the legislative solution. In a new report published this month, congressional researchers examined tax policy and restrictions for marijuana industry and how those could change if any number of federal reform bills are enacted. The Congressional Research Service analysis focuses on the section of the Internal Revenue Service, IRS code, known as 280E, which precludes cannabis companies from taking certain federal tax deductions or credits that are available to other businesses, regardless of their state legality, but they are still obligated to pay taxes on their federally illegal income. The Schedule I status of marijuana means that the marijuana businesses are treated differently from many other businesses for tax purposes. However, Congress has broad authority to alter the tax treatment of marijuana marijuana businesses. The legislative history of Section 280E indicates that Congress enacted the provision to codify a sharply defined public policy against drug dealing. The provision was enacted in 1982 as a way to prevent drug traffickers from writing off expenses against their taxes, but it was widely applied today on state-licensed marijuana growers, processors, and dispensaries, greatly increasing their effective tax rates as compared to businesses in other industries. 280E applies to substances in Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 of the Controlled Substance Act. Recent legislative proposals aim to relax the federal restrictions on marijuana or to mitigate the disparity between federal and state marijuana regulations, the new CRS report states. Many of these proposals would alter the tax treatment of marijuana businesses by rescheduling or descheduling marijuana under the CSA or by making marijuana-specific exceptions. Under these proposals, Section 280E would no longer prohibit marijuana businesses from taking deductions and credits. That's important. Let's say it again. Under these proposals, Section 280E would no longer prohibit marijuana businesses from taking deductions and credits. And that's your American Cannabis Conversation Quick News Update. I'm Dan Perkins. Let's see who's joining us in the conversation today. Norbert Kaminsky is a professor of pharmacology and toxicology at Michigan State University, and they're studying how cannabis products could deal with the inflammation caused by coronavirus. Starting this week and periodically, we'll have a new segment called New Product Buzz. We're going to help you understand what's new and up and coming in the cannabis marketplace. So joining us today are two entrepreneurs have created a new product. Alex Shilatis and Phil McGurr join us to talk about Wonder Wine with our roving reporter, Rich Wolkoff. With so much going on all over the country concerning legalization of cannabis, we decided to create a new segment called Legislative Update. And joining us today is our Washington representative for the National Cannabis Industry Association, Morgan Fox. And finally, we finish up today's show with Dr. Joseph Maroon, who will be talking to us about coping with the pandemic. This is Dan Perkins. Let's get this conversation started. Welcome back to the conversation. And joining us today is Dr. Norbert Kaminsky. I read some of his work and had a conversation with him and decided he was important for you to hear. So I've invited him and he's with us today. Welcome, Doctor.
Thank you, Dan, for having me on.
You're welcome. Doctor, I want to tell you, we had a conversation with a very prominent doctor, virologist, and he helped me understand what was going on with patients who had a severe case of COVID-19. And he said to me, Dan, it's like having a raging forest fire in your lungs from the infection that the virus is attacking your body. And I've thought about that so many times. It's such a vivid description of what's going on. And I thought about you when I started reading about your work, not only on COVID-19, but other ailments that involve inflammation. So tell us, if you would, please, Doctor, about the treatment that you're studying.
Yeah. So Dan, the work that you're referring to is really part of a very long-term area of research for my laboratory, which is trying to understand how cannabinoids, so these are the biologically active compounds in cannabis sativa, how they modulate the immune system. And for the most part, these cannabinoids, and the classic example of that being delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, many of these cannabinoids, what they do is they inhibit or suppress immune responses. And so this is what we're interested in. And the reason that this would be important in relationship to COVID-19 is, as the virologist mentioned to you, having your lungs infected with a virus like COVID, influenza can be another example. What happens in some individuals is the immune response is so strong that it can actually be detrimental in terms of injuring the tissues where that immune response is occurring. So the good news about the immune response is that it is trying to clear the virus. but if the response is really, really strong, it can actually damage the tissues like the lungs, which then would result in the lungs not functioning properly. And so the idea behind our studies with these compounds that can be isolated from cannabis sativa is that potentially they can moderate how strong the response is. And so we've seen examples of this, and we've published this work, for example, with influenza, H1N1. And our studies, which are in collaboration with a company called GB Sciences, and this is really their interest, is how this might be applied to COVID, but more broadly, which would be to a condition called cytokine syndrome. So as I've mentioned, COVID-19, if it induces a very strong immune response, can lead to something called cytokine syndrome. So these are cytokines are proteins that are released by your white blood cells to combat the virus. And if it, as I mentioned already, if it's too strong, it can actually be deleterious. And so much of our work is focused on understanding how these compounds in cannabis can be harnessed in a way that they could be applied therapeutically. And our interest is especially focused on inhibiting the inflammatory response, or at least trying to moderate that with these compounds.
Doctor, I have a I have a friend who is a talk show host out of Chicago. He recently came down with viral pneumonia, and he was in really bad shape, and he went to his doctor, and the doctor said, there's not really much I can do for you because you have a virus. And I was thinking about him when I was thinking about talking to you. Historically, we've not really had anything to treat viral infections except for inoculations, like flu vaccines and whatever. Is that true?
Well, yes and no. I mean, vaccines really are our best way to prevent that from happening. I mean, there are antiviral drugs, but certainly for COVID and even for influenza, our best way to protect ourselves is really through vaccination. Yeah.
The annual flu shot.
Yeah.
So do you think we're going to wind up with? Do you think we're going to wind up?
I'm a very strong proponent of vaccinations. I really am. I know a lot of people are concerned about vaccines, but adverse effects to vaccines occur in a very, very small percentage of people, and the kind of the risk benefit, the benefits greatly, greatly outweigh any risk.
Why do you think, and if you don't have an opinion, that's fine. I just asked the question anyway. Why do you think there's such a high percentage of people who are reluctant to get the shots, get the vaccines?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with a paper that was published many years ago, which then was retracted, making various claims about vaccinations. And I think there's been a lot of, I don't want to disparage people that believe this, but kind of urban legend that somehow vaccinations can lead to autism and things like that. And most of that, all of it is really not grounded in any science that I'm aware of. Now, people do have adverse effects, though, to vaccines. I mean, it's like any therapeutic, there's always going to be a small percentage of people that will respond in an adverse way.
Yeah.
But that's typically a very, very small percentage.
There was a report from CDC about 2 weeks ago that said that the number of identifiable deaths from COVID is about 50. But anecdotally, they think it's high as 11,000. And I don't know how you guess anecdotally at 11,000. I did see on one of the medical professional websites that they've said that they believe over 3,000 healthcare professionals have died directly from working in the environment and treating people with COVID-19. I guess we need more time and more research to find out what's really going on. And I think maybe that lack of information is what has some percentage of the people very concerned about it. Let's go back to your compound. Talk a little bit about your compound. How did you discover it, and how do you put it together, and where do you get it from?
Yeah, so when I referred to these active compounds in cannabis, these are chemicals that are quite diverse in terms of there being over 100 structurally similar compounds yet distinct that can be isolated from cannabis. And so for the most part, we know a lot about delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, or delta-9 THC, because that is the primary psychotropic cannabinoid in cannabis.
Mm-hmm.
But the other 100 plus, there's actually very little known about them. We know more and more about cannabidiol because obviously people are very interested in it. Many people believe it's the next miracle drug, which again, I would caution your listeners. And there's a handful of others, but for the most part, most of these really have not been studied to any great extent. Our work with this pharmaceutical company, GB Sciences, has been interesting because the company has taken an approach to use various biological assays to screen these various 100-plus cannabinoid compounds, plus other things that they've identified in the plant. And then they have narrowed it down to a handful of compounds, which they now are looking at combining in various mixtures to see if they can develop therapeutic agents.
Are we still talking about an all-natural product?
Yes and no, in that the molecules were originally identified in the plant, but they can actually be made artificially in a laboratory, mm-hmm. or by a pharmaceutical company, mm-hmm. to ensure their purity, and that's how they would be used if they were ultimately used therapeutically.
We've got about a minute left, Doctor. You indicated when we talked before that you're also interested in the applicability of this combination in the treatment of HIV.
Yeah, so the other area that we're very interested in, again, pertains to the anti-inflammatory properties of these compounds. And what people who don't have HIV are probably not aware of is that beyond being immunocompromised, HIV patients can develop something that was at one time called neuroAIDS, but has been renamed as HIV-associated neurocognitive disorder, or HAND. And this is due to a chronic inflammation in the brain that results in the destruction of neurons. And ultimately what happens is that these individuals begin to develop, can develop a loss of cognitive function, and in most severe cases it's can result in dementia, very similar to what you might see in an Alzheimer's patient.
Wow.
And so our interest is in using cannabinoids to decrease that neuroinflammation.
Well, Doctor, unfortunately, we're out of time for this segment. So please tell people how they can follow you and get updates on what you're doing in your research.
They can certainly follow us at Michigan State University. And I direct the Institute for Integrative Toxicology and also the Center for Research on Ingredient Safety. And so they can go to those websites. And they can also follow our science in the peer-reviewed literature.
Dr. Norbert, thank you for joining us today.
It's time for you to make a decision about your health care. It's time for you to make a decision on how you're going to protect yourself against viruses. Isn't it time to make sure you have the strongest immune system you possibly can? Isn't it time to make a decision to buy CV Sciences CV Acute and CV Defense to help you build the strongest antiviral immune system you can? It's time for you to go to empoweryourself.info and purchase CV Acute and CV Defense and take charge of your health care.
Welcome to the New Product Buzz segment on The Conversation. We'll be keeping you updated on new cannabis and CBD products in the marketplace. We will talk to the playmakers and entrepreneurs who are driving the expansion of this incredible industry.
Oh, the evolution of the cannabis consumption. Boy, old school guys, we go back to the pipes and the papers, and that was pretty much it. Nowadays, you've got vapes and extracts, oil, wax, dabbing, tinctures, edibles, topical balms, and folks, try drinking your High Time experience. That's the latest and greatest, and let's welcome in co-founders from Wonder, the cannabis-infused sparkling beverage, Alexi Chialtis and Phil Magar. Guys, congratulations on this great new product. I've experienced your watermelon wave, your lemon ginger lift, and your blood orange bliss. You guys are rocking it. Really awesome stuff.
Thank you, Rich. It's great to be here. We're excited to talk about everything that is all Wonder.
Yeah, well, Wonder with a WUNDR, and I guess that, you know, a little twist on that. But it's 2 milligrams of THC, 2 milligrams of Delta 8, and 4 milligrams of CBD. So, Phil, tell me why that's your formula.
Yeah, so we spent a good 6 to 9 months sort of thinking and working on the right formulation. And there's a lot of different compounds in the cannabis plant. We wanted to exploit novel, what are called novel cannabinoids. And so our first formulation, we along with our other co-founder, Christian Peterson, came up with this idea of really mimicking alcohol in a drink. And so to do that, we wanted the psychoactivity or the buzz from Delta-9 THC, which is the most common cannabinoid. We wanted to use CBD, which is a modulator, which helps downregulate and relax some of the effects of Delta-9. If anyone's had anxiety or if they've had too much THC, CBD is a good modulator for that. And then another compound, which is sort of a cousin to Delta-9 THC, is Delta-8 THC. And it's about half of the psychoactivity of Delta-9, so it doesn't get you as high, but it really puts you in your body. It really gives you this in-your-body feeling, which is great for either activities like yoga or being outside on a hike or chilling and relaxing at home.
Now, you talk about 8 ounces, 50 calories, low glycemic index, and obviously natural stuff. So indica, sativa, does it vary in your drinks?
Yeah, so I mean, I think that the strains are really interesting in thinking about the flower world. And the way that we think about it from a beverage perspective is, it was as Phil described it, it's this really well-rounded experience. It's not too much of a head high, but it also has the Delta 8, which helps to bring in the body relaxation. So it's a great hybrid, I think, is the way to think about mm-hmm. that.
Now, unlike edibles or other means of ingesting marijuana, this is you won't have to wait an hour or two to feel the effects. So talk about that aspect of it in terms of the delivery system.
Yeah, no. So we're in the early days of figuring out beverages. We really quickly realized that it was going to take the right partners, the right collaborators to build this category together. And so we were lucky to find and to know the Virtosa team, Ben and Harold, who had been working on the technology front of figuring out how do we make beverages more like alcohol in terms of the way that it's onset and offset. So how long does it take for somebody to start feeling it? And how long is that experience? And what beverages brings and what they've actually ended up providing is that you can start to feel it in as little as 15 minutes. Whereas in an edible, that can be up to 60 to 90 minutes before you start to feel it. And then that actual experience of feeling the effects can be several hours in some cases. And when you think about the social experience and when you think about beverages and alcohol, and if you're trying to mimic that experience, it really needs to come up and start feeling it sooner. And then it also needs to offset sooner. And so with the technology, we've been able to accomplish that.
Yeah. So now it's available only in California as we speak.
That's right. We're available all across California. It's a regulated, it has Delta 9, so it's a regulated cannabis product. We're available. Do you want me to say where it's available?
Sure.
It's available on the Ease platform, on Sava in the Bay Area. It's available on MJ in LA, along with a ton of great retailers. We picked really tier one retailers in both the Bay Area and LA and elsewhere. So Apothecarium in San Francisco, Soulful up in Napa and Sonoma area. So if you're up there, and then Calma Green Goddess down in LA as well.
Okay. And what about the pricing? And we think of going to a bar, having a beer for $8 or $10, a pint and maybe a glass of wine being $12. Where does the 8-ounce can of Wonder, the cannabis infused drink, come into play?
So for a 4-pack, it's roughly $22. And we're always fighting to get the price down. So as we scale, we're gonna get the price down for everyone.
Now, I've also seen that major alcohol industry players are coming into the cannabis infused drink beverage part of the business. It's the fastest growing business in California, 40% growth in the last year compared to 38% growth in the cannabis legal sales. So actually exceeding the flower and the edibles aspect of it. But you've got Heineken and Constellation Brands putting billions of dollars. But you guys are more the artisan, or we could call it the boutique player.
Yeah, no, that's right. We're decidedly homegrown. We've invested a lot of our own capital into this. We've had the support of friends, family, and now angel investors. But also the big players are starting to take notice. It's not, you know, every few weeks we're getting pinged by, you know, the big either alcohol companies that want to learn about what we see in the market, how we're approaching it. You know, at the end of the day, we're the tip of the spear. The big alcohol companies or the big cannabis companies, you know, they can't use massive economies of scale because the market's so fragmented, whether it's either by a state-by-state basis. And so what we try to focus on is how do we deliver a great experience in an authentic way through connecting with our audience by what our brand stands for, because our brand is much more than just a pretty image. And at the end of the day, consumers really care about the whole package.
Right. Now, the original marketing was for the 2 milligrams of THC in an 8-ounce can of your Blood Orange Bliss, your Lemon Ginger Lift, and your Watermelon Wave. But new things on the horizon, Phil.
Yeah, so we recently just launched a new line of drinks, which is aimed at the a heavier consumer. So the people that are smoking, they either have a high tolerance or they're looking for more of a kick. And so if you think about our drinks, they're great. They're low calorie, low sugar. But if you need to have, 10, 15, 20 milligrams to get you high, do you really want to, have all that sugar? No. So we listened and responded, and we've got a new product called Higher Vibes, or Wonder 20, which is the strongest single serving drink in the California market right now. We use 10 milligrams of Delta 9 THC, 10 milligrams of Delta 8 THC, and it's in all three of our great flavors, watermelon, lemon ginger, and blood orange.
Yeah. So how about the growth? How's it been for you guys? You launched in the fourth quarter of 2020. What timing in that ever forgettable and regrettable year? But maybe people need this more than ever.
Yeah, I mean, I think similar to alcohol during the pandemic, alcohol has taken off, but so has cannabis. And then within cannabis, I think you've seen a big shift over the year as people really think about, how they're treating their body. And so where we've seen that manifest is that people have moved from smokables to edibles, and that also edibles, such as beverages, are very approachable for the new consumer. And so that's been a trend that's already been in flux or in flight since before the pandemic. But like all things with the pandemic, it just really got accelerated. And so what we've seen since our launch in October of last year is that it's really uptake. It's really been well received, even so received, well received by consumers, that we're actually seeing, you know, really strong month over month growth sequentially in some of our best retailers. And to make the cherry on top, with the High Times Cannabis Cup, we just won third place in over 100 different beverage submissions. And we were the top ranked ready to drink beverage. And that just means a lot for us, as we've really been validated by a much larger group of people.
Mm-hmm. So this is exciting times for you guys. What has been the buzz around your friends and your community? That was a double entendre intended, the buzz in the community. What's the feedback you've been getting about your product? And are you taking that to heart? If people say it's to this or to that, I want this, I prefer it more this way.
Yeah, we definitely listen for feedback all the time, and we share it internally. And it's amazing. We're getting incredible feedback from across the state. And I think, you know, for us, the feedback that really, at least for me personally, that gives me chills, and is when people can, they say, like, I got a message this morning, I'm off alcohol because of you guys. I think those moments, or when someone's using it to treat an illness, especially during the pandemic, like, so many people were leaning on alcohol. And so to hear that people are using our drink to have a healthier relationship with themselves and create health and wellness, I think it's amazing to hear that. I think it gives us chills. It's why we started this company. Mm-hmm. This is a very personal mission for all of the co-founders, Christian and Alexi and I. So the feedback's been tremendous.
Yeah, I mean, just to echo that, it's it's not a day that goes by where I don't get an email or a picture of somebody not only either enjoying Wonder by themselves, but sharing it. And what we've found is that it's so novel, it's so fresh, it's so different, it's so great tasting. And with the Delta 8, it just really adds another dimension. And people are just bringing it to, you know, whenever they meet people, whether it's people, you know, meeting together in a socially distant way, they're bringing some drinks for people to have at the park or to have over an outdoor gathering. So we can't just wait to see what happens this summer, because I think everyone's ready to get vaccinated and to continue to relive their social lives.
Right. And you pointed out to me before our interview that many consumers are combining alcohol and cannabis-infused drinks, as well as taking the path that Phil pointed out in lieu of alcohol, taking the cannabis-infused drinks as a different option. But talk about how those come into play.
Yeah, so, you know, our intention with Wonder was really to allow people to drink less. And I don't think it's always so black and white as I don't think any of us feel that it's so black and white that you're either drinking alcohol or you're not, and you're on one side of the fence or the other. And for us, it's about meeting people where they're at. And Wonder, you know, I think there's a BDS stat that said that of the people who consume cannabis and alcohol, you know, 50% of them consume both in the same occasion. And so with our formulation, we took that to heart, and we really thought about what could live in that occasion where somebody else is also, you know, potentially imbibing in that way. And, you know, Delta 8 is, that's another reason why Delta 8 was a great ingredient. And you know, to each their own, and technically we're not supposed to, we don't endorse people doing both as a brand. That's the California regulations keep us in that way.
Cool. And if we want to find you online and learn more about your product?
Yeah, we're at Find Wonder, both findwonder.com and then also on Instagram. We appreciate all the follows. We think we have a pretty beautiful Instagram page. And feel free to communicate with us too. You know, hit us up in the DMs. As they say, we love communicating with people, answering questions or helping them on their journey with us. So.
Well, it's awesome stuff. I'm a new convert, hadn't had a cannabis infused drink before I tried your Wonder, and it was dynamite. So congratulations to you both, co-founders of Wonder, the cannabis infused sparkling beverage, Alexi Chialtis and Phil McGar. Best of luck to you guys. Rich Walkoff on the W420 radio network. And if you missed this interview or parts of it and want to hear it again, go to W420radionetwork.com archive. We'll be right back.
Hello, this is Dan Perkins from America's Cannabis Conversation, and I'm here to talk to you about CV Sciences, the company that developed the immune system support products called CV Acute and CV Defense. One of the questions I asked the company was, how safe and effective are these products? Recently, I interviewed Stuart Tonk on my show, and here is his response to my question.
Science supports it. CV Acute and CV Defense are backed by research, cited by the World Health Organization for immune system challenges. It's safely used in hospitals. That's right, CV Acute is safely used in hospitals in Europe and in China.
If you want a productive immune system, you need to purchase both CV Defense and CV Acute. You can find out more information about both of these products at empoweryourself.info. Empower yourself and take charge of your response to COVID-19. You have the power to control yours and your family's health care.
It's time for the Cannabis and CBD Legislative Update. Things are changing in Washington, D.C. and all around the country about cannabis and CBD. The Conversation's Legislative Update will keep you informed on the rapidly changing cannabis and CBD industry legislation.
Welcome back to the Conversation, and joining us today is our legislative specialist Morgan Fox from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Good. We have a lot to talk about, so let's get started. There seems to be, at least from my perspective, there seems to be a lot of enthusiasm shortly after the inauguration with Chuck Schumer and Cory Booker talking about getting cannabis on the agenda during this session. But there's been some kind of twists and turns that I didn't expect to see happen. One of them, that they're talking about limits on the dosage in terms of the strength of it. We had maybe a dozen people in the White House who were fired or resigned or reassigned because of their disclosure of their previous use of cannabis, but apparently not the vice president. She didn't get fired. So give us kind of an update on what's going on in Washington on the major legislation.
Well, just to be clear, we haven't heard any of the champions in the Senate really talking about potency caps in any real serious way. We're still waiting on draft legislation, and we've been working closely with Senate leadership's offices to make sure that they have the best information that possible in order to make really good comprehensive legislation. And we're going to be working with them after the draft drops to help develop amendments for that. So at this point, I'm not overly concerned about potency caps being in the descheduling legislation that Senate leadership comes out with. And to tell you the truth, Senators Feinstein and Cornyn have never really been champions, and they're recommendations for exploring potency caps are not backed by science yet either. So, I think that that's something that we should definitely be aware of and stay in front of, but I'm not terribly concerned at this point about that particular bill. I think that we're definitely going to have to look out for that when it comes to the state level, as Florida and several other states are considering legislation that is directly related to the potency of cannabis products. And, I think that there may be some interest in exploring limits on total amounts of THC, but concentration is something that's just not backed by science at this point. So just something to keep on our radars. When we're talking about the what happened with the Biden White House last week, it absolutely sends the wrong message to both advocates for cannabis policy reform, but also to federal employers as well as private sector employers throughout the country. I don't think that this necessarily signals that the Biden administration as a whole or the president himself is softening on support for reform. Sometimes in federal offices, there's disconnect between stated policy positions of its leaders and some of the structural policies that have been in place for decades, and sometimes they can take a while to catch up. But I thought that it was really great to see the almost universal outrage coming from the general public about this as a sign that these sort of double standards are not going to be tolerated going forward.
Well, I agree with you. I think that they didn't expect the pushback that they got, but that's, and this is me speaking, and you don't have to agree with or disagree on saying, I think this is part of the problem with the administration, is that they're, in many ways and in many areas, they're out of sync with the American public. And the cannabis situation is just one of those examples of where somebody within the organization at the White House decided to do something and either didn't tell the higher-ups or the higher-ups didn't object to what they were going to do. So communication. Is it raining there?
Yeah, just a little bit.
Okay.
But, you know, I think that, you know, you make a good point, but you really have to look at this in terms of how we're going to get to descheduling. I mean, Congress is always going to be the source of this, and I don't think that this incident is indicative of any sort of real-world possibility that President Biden would veto any comprehensive descheduling language that gets to his desk.
Mm-hmm. So we have the either is about to or has been put out on the new safe banking law was reintroduced in the House. I think it was this week, or was it last week?
It was reintroduced in the House last week with more than 100 original co-sponsors and bipartisan support. And then just yesterday, it was introduced reintroduced in the Senate by Senators Merkley and Republican Senator Steve Daines from Montana, with including them, 29 original co-sponsors, five of whom are Republicans.
Okay. Do you think that the dead even situation in the Senate makes it more difficult to get reform passed through the Senate?
Well, I mean, it certainly. I mean, it's not as good as a filibuster-proof majority of Democrats, but at the same time. Republican senators have traditionally been much more supportive of incremental reforms than they are for more comprehensive reforms. And the Safe Banking Act is a narrowly tailored revenue neutral fix for a growing public safety issue. There was significant amount of support in the last session. And I think that the primary reason that the bill didn't move farther than it did, aside from the pandemic, was because of obstruction from Senator McConnell. And now that McConnell is no longer in charge of the hearing process or what bills get considered. I see a much clearer path forward for this legislation in the current session. And the fact that it has broad bipartisan support is going to make it, and as well as the fact that it's directly related to economic recovery post-pandemic, is going to give this bill a lot greater chance of getting passed through both chambers this year.
Okay. So you think it would be in it? The Schumer and Booker said this legislative session, which is 2 years, you think it's possible that it could come under consideration before the end of the calendar year?
I think it's very possible that safe banking could get a vote before the end of this year.
And you think safe banking comes first before decriminalization?
I mean, that really all depends on Senate leadership. You know, there are some people that think that passing safe banking before more comprehensive reforms will take some of the wind out of the sails of those comprehensive reforms. I am not one of those people. In my experience, cannabis policy has generally been very incremental, and the passage of any cannabis-related bill makes it that much easier for lawmakers to wrap their heads around supporting the next one, and which is usually going to be a little bit more comprehensive than the last one. So. You know, I think that we're going to have to wait and see, but considering that this legislation is already written, has already been passed by the House 3 times, and has bipartisan support in both chambers, makes it a pretty easy lift for lawmakers to get passed while they continue to work on the details of a comprehensive legislative fix for prohibition.
If they decriminalize it through legislation and the president signs it, in your opinion, right now, who would be the oversight agency?
Well, our recommendation is to determine regulatory jurisdiction based on the types of cannabis products. So products with greater than 0.3% THC, would be regulated by the Alcohol, Tobacco, Tax, and Trade Bureau, and then everything else would be regulated as either, you know, topicals, food additives, or inhalables by the FDA.
Does that create any conflicts or challenges between interagencies about enforcement? And the states would have to be dealing with probably then the states and the companies in the business would have to be dealing with two different regulators depending upon whether the state allows the cannabis dispensaries to sell CBD, which could be a problem. Like, I don't think you could do that in California. You can't sell CBD at a cannabis dispensary. But with two regulatory agencies, is that going to, you think that's problematic or not?
I don't think that's going to cause any issues, and there's precedent for it already. So it'll really determine or depend on what the actual regulations look like. Which we really don't know yet. And also, once they're instated, those regulations could change based on pragmatism or new research or any number of other factors. So I really don't think that that's going to be an issue at all.
So the two agencies that would have oversight would be independently would be responsible for writing some degree of regulations for both of the product lines, the CBD and the cannabis. How do you have any sense of how they will take into effect what the regulations are in the states currently?
Well, I think that largely these would be guidelines that states would have to meet, but then states could also set their own regulations as well. And, you know, I know that state regulators are definitely working with, federal regulators as well as with lawmakers on these issues as well. I think that it'll be necessary to take those into effect or into account, but also those regulations will help inform what the federal regulations are because the states simply have more experience with the topic than they do.
Would you think that in addition to the two agencies you mentioned, wouldn't it possibly be FDA be involved and Federal Trade Commission?
Well, I think the Federal Trade Commission would probably be involved at some level in the business side of it, but at that point, cannabis businesses would be legal and regulated just like any other business, so I don't think that there would necessarily be any sort of specific additional restrictions or regulations from FTC. And as I said, FDA, at least under our recommendations, would be in charge of regulating products with less than 0.3% THC, or depending on how that definition changes, maybe going up to like 1% or 2% or something like that, if the USDA and Congress decide to change that definition. So FDA would then be in charge of regulating topicals, like other topicals, regulating cannabinoid food products that have less than 0.3% THC as food additives, inhalables, similar to other inhalable and vaporizer products. So. There's definitely a role for them there. And like I said, there is precedent for multiple agencies having jurisdiction over differing products based upon their intended use and the intrinsic nature of those products.
Okay. Unfortunately, Morgan, we're out of time. Please tell the audience how they can follow you and these all important legislative issues.
Well, you can go to our website at thecannabisindustry.org. We're also available on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Instagram.
So, thank you for joining us today, Morgan. Always helpful and always informative when we have a chance to talk with you.
Hello, this is Dan Perkins for your Songs and Stories for Soldiers, Veterans, Tip of the Day. Did you know the unemployment rate for veterans is 12.5%? Because of the pandemic, the number of homeless veterans is increasing rapidly. In fact, there are waiting lists at VA shelters for people to come. Many of the veterans who go to the homeless shelters find themselves without decent shoes to go out and apply for a job. They come to the VA and they get health care, clothing, food, but they can't get shoes and socks. That's why we started the program. We are in our fourth annual Shoes and Socks for Homeless Veterans Drive. If you want to help, go to songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us and click on the Amazon button where you can order shoes and socks that are sent directly to me and I will deliver them to the VA facility so veterans will get shoes and socks. That's songsandstoriesforsoldiers.us, Amazon button. This is Dan Perkins for your Veterans Tip of the Day. Hi, this is Dan Perkins, and this is your COVID-19 tip of the day presented by CV Sciences, makers of the products CV Acute and CV Defense. Now that you've had your shots, you wonder, what can you safely do? That's a great question. And I know that millions of people who have completed their shots are asking that question. Millions of newly inoculated Americans are eagerly anticipating the return to long postponed activities and visits with sorely missed friends and relatives. Dr. Fauci warns, however, vaccinations are not a pass. The recently inoculated are engaged in a new round of complicated risk-benefit assessments. What can I safely do? Where can I go? And how do I interact with people who are not vaccinated? Experts agree broadly on many issues people have questions about, but they differ on details and lack some important information. For example, they still don't know whether people who are vaccinated can get asymptomatic infections and pass them on to those who are not inoculated, which is why the CDC urges people to continue to wear masks and practice social distancing, even after they receive their shots. Scientists are also racing to determine how much protection vaccines offer against the highly transmissible variant popping up in the United States. Dr. Fauci does not plan to dine indoors with people outside his household, even if they are vaccinated, until the coronavirus is much less prevalent and not able to circulate freely. The objective is herd immunity, but herd immunity can come from two places. One, from people who have a natural immunity because they had the coronavirus and vaccines. Scientists are now suggesting that herd immunity needs to be 80 to 85%. So continue to wear your masks, wash your hands, practice safe distancing, and stay in close quarters. If you haven't gotten your COVID-19 shots, you can also help build your immune system while you're waiting by taking CV Defense. Go to empoweryourself.info and learn about the products and how to purchase CD Defense and CV Acute. This is Dan Perkins with your COVID-19 tip of the day. Welcome back to American Cannabis Conversation, and joining us today is Dr. Joe Maroon. He's been on other shows with us, but we're here drilling down into what's going on and with this coronavirus and what people need to do. Doctor, thank you for coming back on again.
Again, my pleasure, Dan.
So I want to ask you the question. I'm sitting in my living room. I haven't been out of my house much for 11 months. And when I go out, I wear my mask and I wash my hands and try and practice safe distancing. And yet I see all around me the number of people infected going up to hundreds of thousands a day. Thousands of people a day are dying. And I'm beginning to feel two emotions, anger and frustration. The anger because I still don't have the vaccine and I'm not sure that I want it anyway. And frustration because I don't seem to think I have any alternatives. Now, I'm not being critical of you, doctor, but a lot of your peers have said diet, exercise will help you with your immune system. And as we spoke on the last show, I said, doctor, that may be true, but it ain't realistic. People might deal with exercise for 2 or 3 days or a week or maybe 2 weeks, but they're going to fall off the wagon. So I think that there are tens of millions of people in this country today who are looking for somebody to say to them, don't just sit there, empower yourself, get in charge of your health care, and there are things that you can do to try and protect yourself. And the most important thing, I believe, doctor, is a healthy immune system. How do we get there?
Totally agree.
How do we get
there?
Totally
agree. And Dan, you're not unusual. Many, many, many of the individuals who have come down with the virus have also washed their hands, social distances, and wear masks. So it's not enough. It's not enough. We're all going to be exposed. And basically, we need to enhance our immune system. And there's an echo.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. And basically, you're right, diet, exercise, and control of stress. Stress, worry, is a major detriment to our immune system, makes us much more accessible and amenable to infections, cancer, heart disease, and stroke, for that matter.
So Doctor, I apologize for interrupting you, because you're a wonderful guest, and I just have to bring this point out to our audience. In the beginning of December, it fits very close with what you're talking about. In the beginning of December, the Center for Disease Control said
One in four Americans, that's one quarter of our total population, is dealing with either depression or very high anxiety.
Yes.
25%. And
yeah.
You, it may be people in your own family in your house or yourself. So it really, what you're saying is that one of the big issues here is anxiety and depression, which is putting pressure on us and on our immune system. Is that fair?
Yeah. Yeah. I just sent you my book, Dan, on burnout. And basically what's happening to the population, over 50% of the population is experiencing what's called burnout. In the medical profession, this is epidemic now. And burnout is overworked, overcommitted, overexhausted, overstressed, and markedly suppresses our immune system. It makes us accessible to anything that comes around the corner in that regard.
So,
it's the mental aspect of this as much as the physical.
So, Doctor, let me again, you're such a wonderful guest and you're a wealth of knowledge. I just keep feeling like I got to ask you more questions. If we think about the stress issue is not specifically a byproduct of the virus, it's how we are adjusting to and living with it. So there are now people, more and more people coming out, professionals are saying, sequestering may not be a good idea because there are mental health issues that we're not dealing with. Would you agree with that?
That's what happened to our kids. Absolutely. Absolutely. It's the mind-body connection that everybody should know about. And as a man thinketh, so he shall be. And meaning that if you are depressed, if you're anxious, if you're tense, that suppresses the immune system so that your T cells and your macrophages and the cells that fight inflammation and fight infections are suppressed. They don't work. So you become extremely vulnerable because of your thoughts, because of your worry and anxiety. It's a huge problem. I see it every day.
So we're talking about now stress as a factor that makes us more susceptible to getting the disease if we're exposed to it. So
exactly,
how do we empower people to begin to take charge of their own health? What can they do?
Well, I think there are many. The popular press is full of information on vitamin D, zinc, elderberry, selenium, and various compounds that enhance the immune system, that are anti-inflammatory, that are antioxidant, that protect us from bacterial and viral infections. So that the easiest thing to do is to take particular products that have been known, have scientific backing, that support our immune system, like CV Defense, which we talked about in terms of vitamin A, D3, zinc, selenium, and PG and others, PEA. And then also, if you do get infected, there are typical things that have been used for many, many years to help, again, overcome the virus. There are antivirals, there are anti-inflammatories themselves. So these are a few products that you can ingest on a daily basis in terms of immune support, in addition to realizing that your brain controls your immune system to a large extent. Our thoughts determine who we are and determine how our body is going to react to stress.
Amazing. Unfortunately, Doctor, we're out of time again. Thank you for joining us today. It was a very insightful, and I appreciate your time.
My pleasure, sir.
We've been speaking to Dr. Joe Maroon, who happens to own two Super Bowl rings, too, for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But that's another story for another day. Doctor, how can they follow you?
Again, my website is josephmaroon.com.
So if you miss any of this terrific interview with Dr. Maroon, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com, go to the archive section, and listen to the show. You'll learn a lot about COVID-19. And we'll be right back.
Introducing CV Defense for daily immune support with PEA.
DEA backed by 6 double-blind clinical trials. Reishi mushroom extract. A proprietary blend of immune-supporting ingredients. Non-GMO, gluten-free, vegan, exclusively from CV Sciences. Go to empoweryourself.info.
W420RadioNetwork.com.